Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Coastlines with Fargo-Moorhead Redhawks manager Chris Coast. Coastlines is a weekly program that gives you, the fans, the opportunity to ask the Redhawks manager questions about the team, baseball or sports in general, or just seek Chris's wisdom about life events that are going on out there. In this week's episode, Chris discusses his thoughts on the first week of the season. He tells us what his greatest accomplishment outside of baseball is. And is Chris the champion in all sports in his household? Let's find out on Coastlines.
Well, let's welcome back manager Chris Coast. Chris, do you have any team updates for us first?
Not really. It's more so we signed Jordan Patterson to play some right field and probably pitch for us. We're really looking for him to earn the nickname Shohei Ohtani so he can really be that incredible presence in the middle of the order and also pitch some innings. So that's kind of one of the things is, we're going to allow him to pitch a little bit, play some right field, DH on occasion. That's really the big addition that we've had. So other than that, the only real additions are guys we've already had. It's getting them to be as good as they can be, getting them back in shape, whether it's getting at bats or the bullpen, getting their innings in and the rotation getting stretched out. So really, it's not so much about adding names as it is making sure our names that we already have are progressing to be as good as the back of their baseball card would suggest. So that's kind of the state we're in right now is, well, the expectations are going to start to ramp up that our guys can perform and produce the way that they want to, but more so the way that they're capable of and what they've shown in the past.
What have you thought so far of kind of the overall play of the league with, you know, all these guys brought in? You know, this is a pretty talented league. So what's been kind of your overall thought rates to this point?
I can't say I'm surprised. I think we knew going in with the availability of players and with the changing of the rules with no rookie mandates, and you still have to work a salary cap, so there's still a lot of strategy, obviously, but there's now so many more high-level players willing to play for less than they may have played for last year. So we're able to get guys, a lot of teams, like we played Winnipeg 6 times, and they look like a AAA roster. It's like 1 through 9. And granted, they were all got kind of hot at the same time, but 1 through 9, they did not give away at bats. They got our pitch counts up. They battled. If they swung at the first pitch, they barreled it. You know, so offensively and defensively, that's another thing about Winnipeg that we saw was their defense was incredible. I'm not sure that they made more than one error in those 6 games that I can recall. There may have been some in there, but defensively, pitching-wise, they're really good. Bullpen-wise, no foreseeable weakness that we saw. Then Chicago comes to town, and they beat up on us 2 out of 3 games. We were in position to maybe win the first game. We had a bullpen issue and let it get there, but Chicago is incredibly strong. Another team that you could probably throw right into AAA, and they would have success. So only 2 teams we've seen so far. Once again, the level of play is as we thought it was going to be. Still not a surprise. Makes it a lot more fun, though, because knowing that whether they're scouts watching us, fans watching us, Korean scouts watching us that we've seen in the stands, Japanese scouts that we've seen at games, you know, the expectations are that this league is going to be what we thought it was going to be. So it's been a lot of fun just to see. As a baseball fan myself, it's pretty awesome to see how good the AA has become talent-wise.
I bet. Well, let's jump into our fan questions this week. So we start with a couple from Tom. He says, that Carell Prime is really good. How is this guy not getting a look by affiliate clubs?
You know, it's kind of the goal for every independent league player to get signed, but they also want people to say, why is this guy in the league? You know, Carell Prime is one of those guys. There's a handful of guys, like Leo Pena was that guy in the past, where people would say, what is this guy doing in the league? And Carell Prime is an example because he's so well-rounded that maybe the only, it's not a flaw, but maybe the only thing that scouts might see is he has a little bit of maybe Carlos Beltran in him, meaning that it looks like he's not always trying. Even though he's going 100%, he plays with such ease that it doesn't always look like it. In some ways, that's a benefit because he'll catch the defense asleep and he'll get an extra base or a stolen base or beat out a ground ball, things like that. But, you know, he's been put at first base, and it's incredibly tough to get signed as a first baseman, but we put him in the outfield. He's incredible in the outfield. We're toying with the idea of potentially putting him in center field, and that could only hopefully increase his stock as well. So, yes, between what he does with the bat, putting at-bats together, and his ability to play a ton of positions, and he's still only 26 years old. He's still he's still getting better. So he's one of those guys that we would love to see get a shot, because not only is he a really strong player, he's just a fantastic guy, fantastic teammate. Anybody that he's come across will tell you that they want to see this guy get a shot.
Tom would also like to know, he says, from your history, do teams give you a little more consideration in terms of opinions you have on guys because of who you are and because of how you rose to the very top?
I think there's some of that to a certain extent. You know, it's, we all have our reputation. We all have our word. You can lose it real quick. You can gain respect pretty quick. You know, if I'm recommending a guy and he clearly doesn't fit up to the build, then I can lose my reputation in that regard really quick. In fact, I try to, when we're trying to sign players, we try to remind agents of that very thing. Like, if you're going to recommend your guy and he's not up to the task, you kind of lose some of your credibility. So you really still, even though I feel like my word means a lot and I'm a pretty good evaluator, and if I have a guy and I call the Phillies, I really hope the Phillies or the Brewers or that I have a relationship would certainly take a look. So that's kind of the tough thing about being a manager in this league, is you want all your guys to get a shot with an organization. But once again, I can't call the Phillies, for example, and say, hey, I got 9 guys, you should sign them, because I'd probably lose my word pretty quick. But no, I think that a lot of managers in this league, for example, Joe Kelly in Kansas City gets guys signed. Steve Montgomery gets guys signed. I think the league has built up a reputation with the managers having their words taken with a certain amount of respect. So that's a positive thing.
Isaac would like to know, he says, there's a lot of downtime in baseball during games. So what are you talking about down in the dugout?
It's kind of funny, because as a player or a coach, there gets to be a lot of downtime and you tell stories and things like that. But now that I'm the interim manager, all these little protocols and details and lineups and things, it's like I feel like every minute of my day is being used up. And that's a good thing. That's absolutely not a complaint. I've really come to enjoy it, whether it's the pregame interview with our radio guy, Jack Michaels, or making sure the lineup card for the umpires is filled out, because there's a lot of detail and time that goes into that. The dugout lineup card, talking strategies, making sure that, since I'm running the pitching staff as well, I got to make sure that I know all the relievers, who's available, for how long, should they get a day off, only what, under what circumstance should I use them. So as a manager, there's so much thought and details put into every single game that it doesn't seem like there's a lot of downtime. And once again, that's a good thing. But as far as players and coaches, you tell stories, you play cards, you play music, you make a snack, you watch some TV, you play video games. I mean, there's all kinds of things that guys do to kill time. But I've found it very interesting that as a manager, I don't have a lot of free time. And once again, that's a great thing.
Barry says, I would gather that in a shortened season, you really can't let a guy go through a slump and have him stick with the team. But at this point, do you take the risk of bringing in another guy who could potentially bring the virus with him?
That is a fantastic question, because there's so many considerations in a shortened season to bringing in new players or cutting ties with a guy. And then you throw into the last part of that question about risking a guy coming in positive. Well, you know, we do have protocols in place that when they get to town, we are very lucky in Fargo that our testing ability is incredibly efficient and immediate, actually. Not always the results immediate, but like a guy can drive into town and drive right to our clinic and get tested before he even signs a contract, and then get the results back hopefully 24 to 36 hours, which has happened with us. So the COVID thing is definitely a hurdle, but it's more so in a shortened season. If a guy goes into a slump, you have to gamble to a certain extent. Like, if you cut ties with him, are you risking not allowing him getting hot? And we've already come across that. Like, guys that you, and once again, when I try to give guys positivity if they're struggling, I tell them the things that I did. You know, if you're doubting yourself, look at the back of your baseball card. Look at your baseball reference if you've had success. Remind yourself that you are, in fact, a really good player. So as a manager, along with, you know, Jeff Bittiger, who makes roster decisions with me, we have to do that too. If we have a guy that we're considering letting go, but yet he has an amazing past, we have to remind ourselves of that. Like, if we really want to cut ties with a guy who at any moment could bust out and do incredibly well. And I'll give you just one quick example. Was in 2018 when Sioux Falls cut ties with Chris Jacobs. He only had one home run, you know, and to it's not Sioux Falls' fault. They just felt like they had given him a lot of opportunity. We signed him. He got hot immediately, and for a year and a half, he was maybe the best power hitter in our league. So you have to risk that letting the guy go when he may in fact turn out to be your best hitter. And there's a lot of decisions that go into making changes, no question.
You know, I'm kind of curious about that, Chris, because I remember talking with Tony Thomas one day, and he was telling me that when he's in a slump, he watches videos of himself when he was having a lot of success. Is a lot of times, is it just seeing and knowing that you can do something that helps you break you out of a slump?
Well, with hitting especially, and pitching, there's versions of this too, but with hitting, if you are a really good hitter, the only thing that's left is, you know, getting your reps in and then confidence, which you can't, it's hard to pretend and fake confidence. It's one of those things, you walk into a batter's box and sometimes you just have, I've always felt like that's one of the reasons why Albert Pujols for 10 years was the best right-handed hitter maybe in the history of the game, because he walked up there 4.5 times a game knowing that he was going to find a barrel, you know, and most of us didn't have that. He was a gifted hitter, but the confidence was never not there. And so, yes, absolutely. I told about two guys, we had an off day, but some guys came in to hit, and some of them hadn't been hitting as well as they could be. And I told them that. I'm like, look at the back of your baseball card. Go look at highlights. And even me, as the manager, if I have one of those winter days, the winter blues, where just for no other reason other than there's no baseball or the weather's crappy or whatever, or I'm just, you know, slight depression, I will absolutely go back and just watch a two-minute highlight thing just to remind myself and just kind of pump myself up and make, you know, brighten my day a little bit. So there's, if a player has access to that, they'd be crazy to not find a way to give themselves confidence, because even athletes at the highest level need to be reminded that, you know, they are in fact at an elite level that 99.99% of the public could never imagine. And so it's a gift, but also it can come and go. So find a way to make it last as long as you can.
Janet would like to know if it is very difficult for you and the players to follow all of these protocols.
It is. Not impossible, and it's not a complaint, but when you're a baseball player, I'm sure other athletes have the same thing, but like baseball, you know, you're so conditioned to routine, not just in a season, but over the course of your career. There's just a certain way that you do things every single day on the field, in the clubhouse, that to totally change it is absolutely not easy. We do the best we can, and we're going to slip up on occasion. But it is, we all know that we got our part and we do the best we can, but it's a concern every day to make sure we're doing things the right way because of the routine that we're used to as professional baseball players.
Michael would like to know, he said, you were such a good catcher in the majors there, Chris. Do you find that it is harder to try to figure out how to pitch against opposing hitters? Or is it harder to keep your pitchers, psychologically on the right pathway and not acting like a head case during games?
That's a good question. I think it's tougher to pitch to opposing hitters because information is limited. It's one of the many awesome things about getting into the big leagues is the scouting reports and the amount of video and information you have is endless. Like when I got to the big leagues, even in 2006, the amount of video available, whatever pitcher I might have to face that night as a hitter, there was absolutely no mystery. It was awesome. But the one thing that we tell our pitchers, if we don't have a lot of information, is even if you have a lot of information, the pitcher still needs to do what he does best. Like, because most really good hitters, if they have a hole, it's very small. And the difference between finding their weak spot and finding their sweet spot is an inch, right? So you could try to expose their weak spots, but you miss and also defining their barrel. So it's such a catchy, touchy situation, fine line, really. So ultimately, even in the big leagues, when they have a lot of information, the pitcher, the thing that they condition us with is the scouting report is important, but nothing is more important than the pitcher knowing what he does and has to do that to the best of his ability. So if a guy's best pitch is a 99-mile-an-hour fastball and you have a dead red fastball hitter, you still have to pitch. You still have to do what you do best and probably throw 99 miles an hour. So, you know, to directly answer the question, the pitcher ultimately has to do what he does best.
Gabriel would like to know what you think of all of these metrics being used to determine the value of players.
There's a market for it. I know a lot of people think that I'm this old school guy and they'd be opposed to it, but I'm not an old school guy. I'm I'm at the school of whatever makes sense. If information is there that's valuable and absolutely applicable at that moment, I'm all for it. I think there's a lot of it that does, in fact, get overused because certain metrics, as valuable as they may be, not all of them can measure the level of competitiveness, the ability to step up in big situations, ability to be consistent on a daily basis. There's so many things that can't measure all that. But there is absolutely a market for certain metrics. Stats have always been important. We've just found ways now that we have technology to measure stats a little bit better. So I'm all for it. I think there's a lot of stats that you can throw right out the window. But at the same time, if you use a stat to your benefit to evaluate a player, absolutely it should be used. But there's limits. You know, there's absolute limits with the metrics and analytics and things like that. It's just a matter of being smart enough and not too hard-headed to think one way or the other. If you're too hard-headed to embrace analytics, you've got issues. If you think analytics are the only answer, you have issues. There has to be some sort of gray area in between that makes sense. Because we are, in fact, dealing with human beings.
You know, you talked about him in the last show, so I'm kind of curious. You know, I'm an old guy, so guys like Mike Boddicker, Jamie Moyer, you know, didn't throw 95, and I think today they wouldn't have even been considered to getting up into the major league level. Am I wrong in that assertion?
I think you are absolutely correct, and that's kind of the scary thing of the ability to compete and succeed should be also a factor. It's hard to measure that with a stat other than the most basic of numbers like ERA, but at the same time, would a guy like Jamie Moyer have even been given an opportunity in the Division I program, for example, or been drafted, you know, things like that. At the same time, I am a believer in whether you talk about like driveline. I think there's a market for driveline and building up arm strength, but at the same time, guys have to be able to pitch because there's so many guys nowadays throwing 95 plus, more than there's ever been. It's incredible. Even in our league, how many guys are touching 97 on the gun? It's absolutely amazing. We had a guy the other day throw a 99 mile an hour fastball and it got laced into right center for a double. What does that tell you? It tells you that yes, throwing hard is important, but you still have to be able to pitch. And I've always felt, even in my day, if I knew a 100 mile an hour fastball was coming, I had a chance because I knew it was coming. I wouldn't be in the majors if I couldn't handle a 100 mile an hour fastball if I knew it was coming. And the guys who, in the big leagues, the guys who throw the most effective are the guys that throw hard, but they also throw a ton of breaking balls. You know, Trevor Bauer is a great example, a big driveline guy, power, power, power. Well, he throws probably 50% off speed, whether it's curveballs, changeups, whatever he's, sliders, whatever he's developing. So power is important, but you got to be able to, in their words, spin the ball as well. So there, you have to be able to pitch.
Jim says there's a push for a lot of kids these days to only focus on one sport. What do you think about that?
I would say my answer to that is pretty simple. If you love three sports and you're good at it, you should probably play three sports. But this notion that a kid shouldn't focus on one sport because he loves it and is good at it, I don't agree with that either. I guess my point is, if a kid loves basketball, and he loves basketball more than anything on the planet, and he wants to do it 12 months of the year, there's absolutely nothing wrong with that, okay? If he wants to play baseball and wants to play football with it, that should also be part of the deal. Because there's something to be said for multi-sport athletes. But I also am not totally of the believer that a reason why a guy is such a great athlete is because he played three sports. He played three sports because he's a great athlete more often than not. So I would never tell a kid that you should quit sports and focus on one. That has to be up to the athlete because he, in fact, loves the sport. And I'll say it like this. People always ask me what kept me going for so long in baseball. Well, I love baseball so much that I was never going to quit. If you have that love and passion for something, playing one sport is fine, but it's all up to the individual and what their passion and desire and things like that. So in a perfect world, kids play three sports if they're good at it. But to say a kid has to play multiple sports does not really tell the whole story.
Jeremy would like to know, he says, the guys on your team in the minor leagues are really also competing against you to try to make it up through the levels. Is it hard to make friendships that way?
To a certain extent, but really it's, the tough part about the relationship building at our level isn't so much guys moving on. It's the potential for guys getting released. You know, it's like you try to build a relationship, and you, whether it's coaching, managing, and making them feel comfortable, and you're in the cage with them, or you're in the bullpen with them talking about pitching, and you develop this relationship and certain bonds that you can't get outside the baseball world. And then all of a sudden, a week later, you're calling them into your office and saying, you know what, we have to go with somebody else. That's a tough part. So the relationship building will always be important, but there's also that line of how fast things can change. It's the toughest part about pro ball, in my experience, is it's a world full of amazing people that would take the shirt off their back for you if they could, but they also have their own career to worry about. And it's, as much as you want to be the best team player in the world, to get where you want to be, there at least have to be a certain percentage of selfishness. And I don't want to say that the wrong way. We all have our own level of selfishness. Even the best teammates I ever had absolutely wanted to win as teammates, but they still had to get their work in so they could succeed, so they could still play and have a career. So it's just, the relationship building for me has been an interesting dynamic, because in college, it's all about the relationship building. We're not really cutting a lot of guys. We're building relationships over the course of 4 years. Then they move on to families and jobs, and you go to their weddings and things like that. Whereas in pro ball, relationship building kind of comes and goes. It's a tough dynamic.
Reggie would like to know what you think is your greatest accomplishment outside of baseball.
Oh, that's a tough one, because it's so easy to talk about the baseball stuff, right? So I would say the family situation. You know, my wife and I have been together since high school, two daughters. It's probably between the family, but, you know, raising two daughters who are amazing, amazing young ladies, a 21-year-old, a 12-year-old, that on a daily basis just dazzle and amaze me. And even during the toughest times, my 12-year-old, for example, puts a smile on my face every single day. So it's hard to not take that part of the answer, because you know, at the end of the day, baseball's my family also, but as far as literally my family, that's the one thing that just, no matter what, can put a smile on my face.
Drake says, you look like such a calm guy in the dugout. Are we going to see some fiery arguments with umpires?
Well, in the middle of a global pandemic, it's really tough. I found myself not, and that's probably why. Like, having been a catcher for so long, I've had so many interactions with umpires that there's probably very few people out there that I know how to work with umpires. I can get on them in a respectful way and even raise my voice, and I know when they can be spoken to or raise your voice. If they come back at me, I know how to come back at them and diffuse it to a certain extent. Will you see me get ejected? I'm not sure, because with the protocols, I certainly don't want to like overstep my bounds and get suspended because of COVID protocols and things like that. So as many times as I do want to raise my voice and yell at an umpire, I think I'm really good at picking and choosing my spots, because umpiring is a brutally tough job. It's also a thankless job. I've always felt like balls and strikes beyond the plate are the toughest officiating job in all of sports. You cannot win. You cannot get calls right all the time. It's just the way it is. One team's going to be mad, sometimes both teams. So I respect what they do. My ability to have worked with them one-on-one behind the plate for so long is definitely a gift and an asset to me. So, but I'm sure you'll see. In fact, if you'd have zoomed in, I think it was game two against Chicago, I had some say with the home plate umpire, but once again, it was still very respectful. You're not going to see me rip bases out of base or whatever the post and throw them over the fence as many times as I want to, right? But so I think you'll continue to see me act in a respectful manner. Having said that, I do come across as a very calm, stoic guy, but believe me, Rob, inside my brain is 1,000 miles an hour at all times. I'm screaming, I'm laughing, I'm crying, I'm excited. The whole gamut of emotions is in my brain 1,000 miles an hour all the time. I've just gotten really good at hiding it. So there you go.
Well, I know you to be a fairly competitive guy, a really competitive guy, so I wasn't playing you a Monopoly or anything. So. Yeah. Amanda says, one of the funniest things I think about people is that they don't seem to be as impressed with accomplishments of those of their family members. So what does your family think about your success?
I think they really enjoy it. The interesting thing is I have two daughters, a 21-year-old and a 12-year-old. The 21-year-old grew up in the baseball life. She was in the World Series parade with my wife and I, so she still sees me as like the baseball player, which is awesome. I'm her dad, and she, you know, respects that, but she still sees me as like the guy who was on TV in Philadelphia all the time, right? Now, my 12-year-old, she's seen some video, but to her, I'm just an awesome dad. So there's like, I get this dynamic of both to where, you know, my family does know, you know, what I did and stuff like that. But, you know, in time, it fades to a certain extent, and sometimes we forget. Sometimes the coolest moments when I was a player in Philadelphia was we'd be at a restaurant and I'd get recognized, or at a mall somewhere in Philadelphia area and get recognized. And all of a sudden, I instead of being a dad, I become a coach really fast. And that was pretty cool. I always embraced that stuff. Like, I wasn't that guy that I was at a restaurant and someone asked for an autograph, I might not only sign their autograph, I might even pay for their meal. It's just one of those things where I just love the fan interaction along with the media interaction. I really embraced that part about being an athlete. And it was easier for me because I wasn't a superstar. I was, you know, I was well known. I wasn't Chase Utley or Kobe Bryant or, you know, LeBron James. So I had really an advantage over the superstars in that I could just be a mildly well-known name, and then people would just leave me alone. So, but to answer that question, my family, you know, they probably appreciate, you know, sometimes what being well-known is more than I do. I really like my family. They enjoy it.
And we end this week with Blake, who says, I find that interesting that baseball is not the house sport at the Coast family. So are you the champion in other sports of your family?
Well, okay, so he's probably referring to the volleyball scenario that we talked about.
I believe, yes.
Which is totally true, and it's interesting because as we speak, my younger daughter is at a volleyball camp being coached by my older daughter. So volleyball is still very much the sport in our household. Now, we love baseball, and baseball, you know, we have some baseball memorabilia around, but really, there's, if you went in my garage, you'd see probably 15 different volleyballs rolling around the floor. Our house, miniature volleyballs, full-size volleyballs, along with baseballs too, but yes, volleyball is still very prevalent. But I grew up playing volleyball, so I'm still very good at it as long as my body allows. So I'm still kind of the king of volleyball too, but my two daughters are also very good.
That's awesome. Thanks for joining us this week, Chris.
You got it. Thanks, Rob.
We want to thank manager Chris Coast for joining us on Coastlines this week. If you have your own questions you'd like to ask the Redhawks manager, please send them to us at askchris@minorleaguesportsreport.com. That's askchris@minorleaguesportsreport.com. Please have your questions to us by Sunday evening so we can give the skipper a little time to review them before we record the show. I'm Rob Pinner, the managing editor of the Minor League Sports Report, and we'll see you next time on Coastlines.